set the scene then. A person who sits down at your robot, what's their experience as a surgeon compared to if they've got to stand over the patient with the probes going in to do keyhole manipulations? For people who haven't seen this, you blow up someone's tummy with gas and then stick tubes down that you then put your tools in, don't you? So how does this differ when they're using your robotic experience?
You know, the big way that I show this to people who are not necessarily keyhole surgeons and so on is I use a we call a dome. So it's a model. And I hang a tiny needle on the end of a string into the dome. And I give them a normal laparoscopic kit and say, pick up the needle. And they can't. And then I do the same in a robot. I put the needle into a dome, I put the robot into it, and I say, try and pick up the needle. And instinctively, they can get across and pick up the needle. And so I believe we can train people much quicker and much more effectively on a robot than we can with keyhole surgery.
Is the robot intervening in the procedure? So when you move, presumably a joystick or a paddle, to manipulate the objects inside the patient, is that a direct connection, or is the robot saying, I know what Mark wants to do, but he's not doing it as well as he could, so I'm going to intervene and change it a little bit to make it even better?
Not yet. That's, I think, quite a while away. At the moment, it's a slave master. So the surgeon remains the master and the robot is a slave. What it does, it gives you better vision, it gives you precision, it gives you better control, and as I said, it reduces training duration. But at the moment, it's still 100%. All the decisions, all the work, all the movements are controlled by the surgeon that's operating it.
Could you in the future do that, though? And could you see a future where you, as an expert in some of those procedures that you've helped to pioneer, could sit in Cambridge and operate on somebody in Cape Town?
So there's telesurgery is a big and interesting area. And some years ago, they did an experiment where a surgeon called Jacques Mariscot operated in Strasbourg on a patient in New York. But in order to achieve that, they laid a cable. And they did it the day before 9/11. So got not a lot of publicity out of it. There's a trouble with the speed of light. If you're operating a very long distance away, when you move your hand, the instrument will be slow to move on the screen behind you. And technologically, we will overcome those things to a degree. So at the moment, what we do have is when we did our first lung case in Germany, the surgeon supervising, it was in the middle of COVID, was in England. And was able to watch over a television monitor and give advice. And so that's something that's growing quite fast. Actually, having a surgeon operate remotely, it's a whole different conversation, because would you want your surgeon to be 300 kilometers away when things went wrong? I don't know.
What about doing a road test on a procedure? If you're going to do something, everyone's different. Everyone's anatomy is different inside. So therefore, although we have a generic way of approaching things, it's the skill of the surgeon being able to drive over those bumps in the road that you know are going to be specific for that patient. So can you take your system, take really high quality scans of that person, build a sort of rendition, a mock-up, and almost play a computer game to try out your approaches to see what's going to be the best way down that road? Is that one way to learn or to try tough procedures?
So now, Chris, you got me worried that you've been going through the company's files. I think that's one of the most exciting areas. So I've just been visiting a simulation laboratory where they make really high fidelity models. And so, yes, I do see you could do a scan of a person's anatomy. You could build the model out of plastic or synthetic substances, and the surgeon could then practice the surgery ahead of going in. I do think that's within reach, very soon, in fact.
Did you think this was going to take off the way that it did? I mean, did you see yourself sitting here? We're in one of your offices. That's a sign of success, isn't it? That you haven't just got one office in one building. You've got multiple buildings in multiple places. Did you see it taking this trajectory and at this sort of pace and reaching this sort of scale when you started all this?
No, not at all. I mean, as I always say, if I knew then what I know now, I probably wouldn't have started. But anyway, here we are. No, I thought it'd be like all my other projects that I'd brought in. I suspected I'd continue to be a gynecologist at Addenbrooke's practicing happily, and then I would do a day or two a week at the robot. But it just became impossible. I couldn't keep up. And while I've maintained a very close contact with my colleagues in Edinburgh, and I have an honorary contract, I had to come full time because the volume of work was so high. Did I see it going where it's going? I hoped it would, because I think that the future, you know, people don't realize, Chris, is that thousands of people, millions of people are injured and die as a result of poor surgery. And something's got to be done internationally to improve surgical training and surgical outcomes. And I think the robot is one of the ways of achieving that goal. I mean, 1 million people die a year in the world due to surgical complications. That's a big figure. We give the coronavirus a good run for its money.
How do you switch off at the end of this? Is sport still? I know when you were younger, you said it began really running around a racetrack that brought you into contact with the medical profession. Are you still doing that kind of thing? You still derive that pleasure and that kind of switch off opportunity from sport, or do you put your energies elsewhere?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, people said, do I still run? I said, I think these days you'd call it jogging. So no, I don't run competitively at all. I still like to, go out and do a bit of exercise. I love sailing. My wife introduced me to dinghy sailing. And it says nothing big or expensive. And we like as a family to sail, and my boys sail as well. And that's lovely. I also have two daughters. They don't sail, but I'm sort of ambitious. I can persuade them to join us. Yes, so sailing for me is one of the places I get away completely. I walk away from everything and I get in the water, and I'm pretty bad at it. So I'm sort of sailing for my life as such. The other one is I enjoy cooking. And I don't know that I'm a stunning cook, but it's again somewhere where I can switch off a bit and just enjoy it. And then I just enjoy time with the family, going for walks and things like that. I don't switch off as well as I should. My wife does have a complaint about that.